My friend Matt Donkin, Regional Superintendent of Schools, joining us this morning. First off, morning, pal. How are you?
Good morning. I sound like I'm maybe doing more late-night radio right now.
Yeah, I sound like you're a famous blues singer. Hey, I'm so glad to stick around. I know you get bronchitis, right? But thanks for coming in, man. I appreciate it, because there are two items. One, when we originally scheduled this interview, it was on the heels of the state of the budget address, whenever the governor talked about pushing pensions to the local level. We had been, and I don't think, well, paranoia is the unreasonable fear of things that don't exist. So we've been hypersensitive to the prospect of this for some time, and it appears as now it's even more real. And I think any homeowner, any parent sees the ramifications of this, because we confront it financially with bills and mortgage payments and property taxes, that these two things don't seem to be able to coexist, Matt.
This is one of the legacies, I guess, of choices made in the past. At least the way I was brought up is you pay your bills. And those kind of things weren't done. And state pension payments went other places. And
are you talking about is money taken out of the pensions? And sometimes payments not put into the pension plan.
I'm talking about money not put into the pension plan. So they did reform pension a couple of years ago with Tier 2, which changes the contributions. But for the what's already been done, that's what we're owing for. Kind of like ordering a lot of nice things off the menu and walking out of the restaurant, leaving the bill for somebody else.
Right.
The state who set the pension programs.
All right. Now, wait a second. I want to stop you right there.
Got it.
The state set the pension plans, because when the governor stated the budget address, he said that if you are going to make those kind of those programs and commitments on the local level, that you should afford the, you should be able to pay for them. He said that in the state of the state address and interviews since.
Yes.
The state sets the pension rates.
The state sets the rates. The state sets the when we've done things like early retirement options, 5 and 5, different things that have sweetened the pensions, as it were. That was done by the state, not by locals. What the contention is that school districts are setting salaries wherever they want to take advantage of the rules. Now, might that happen in some cases? Probably. But for the most part, no. It is a way to compensate and recruit people into education, which we talk about. There's shortages in that area.
Right.
And make sure they're committed there. Part of it is you're not going to maybe make what you could with the education level you have in other fields. But for the long term, there was a pension that was supposed to be there that we owe money for. So the state has the bill right now. And what the governor's put forward, what others have put forward, the speaker, other people over the course of time, is some kind of cost shift back to local government. They say, you're responsible for it. You ran it up.
Over a four-year period, shifted all to you.
Well, some earlier programs had talked about over a 15-year period or something like that, gradual. So you could.
But the quotes I read was 4 years, 25, 25, 25, and 25, yeah.
Which makes it look better when you're proposing a budget on paper, but where's the reality?
The ramifications of this is to a property owner, doesn't matter whether the kids are school or not, is that more and more. And see, and this is the squeeze, because at the same time the governor's saying, well, I want property tax freeze, right? Not an unfamiliar phrase here. And when I've talked to city councilmen and superintendents, I've heard a lot of people, well, the popular colloquialism in Southern Illinois would be squall like a smashed cat. Because they are going, you never heard that one before?
No, I've never heard that.
Really?
Before.
Well, you need to hang out with some more interesting people. I've got a list. And it's interesting, because I did, they're going, how could this be worse? And they have a hard time coming up with that answer.
Well, here's the thing. Can we all in Illinois participate in contributing through income tax and other things, addressing bills that were ran up by appropriations made over the course of time using this money? Or are we going to put it back at the local level? And then you can't say there's not going to be a raise in property tax, because, again, it comes back to you have to pay the bills. Mistakes made in the past, we have to pay the bills. You know, even a few years ago when you were talking about coal miners and others, where pensions were taken away and
right.
and companies were getting and
filing we were bankruptcy all, and filing bankruptcy, federal judges saying you don't have to pay it.
Promises violated. It wasn't right then. It's not right now. Of course, it comes on us as the public to pay for it. Then what's the best way to do it? Something else with this idea, of course, it might help actually those wealthier districts. Who pays more to their teachers? Wealthier districts. What percentage goes toward pension? Wealthier districts. In this case, with some of the new funding formulas, if you're a district who's in pretty good shape, who doesn't need much state money, this is going to make you look poor. So more of this new funding formula that was supposed to help us catch up.
Recently, you may have heard me say this. There was a new record set for a home sold in Chicago. And I asked on, now, I wonder what that is property tax-wise. And not very long afterwards, my phone lit up with a CPA who said, well, that was about, they'll receive $5 million a year in property taxes from that one home. I think it's hard for us to understand that here. Imagine $5 million.
Much for a home, for that matter. But yes.
Right, yeah, but $5 million in property taxes for the school district from that one home. Wow. I want to change gears for you. We're running out of time, and I'm very sorry because I want to spend more time talking about this morning. The day of the Columbine Massacre, I watched that and the afterwards coverage with police chiefs, first responders, firemen, ambulance people around the table as we watched this on TV. And that's when a lot of people's eyes were opened. And I've gotten the vibe over the last few days that, like, school administrators weren't properly prepared. And here's the fact. That day I was with the planning started at the table that day, and to my knowledge, it has never stopped with superintendents and school teachers, of course, under that umbrella when it comes to administration. But this is something that we have been thinking about in schools for 15 years.
It's been a constant as we've talked about plans, developed plans in my teaching career. This is what we do and what we talk about. And it's always changing because you, unfortunately, have had too many examples where you learn from the last example. I know when I was at the ROE, we had guest speakers come in, different people trained in the area, local police departments, law enforcement. We talk about these things continually and trying to stay on our toes. Obviously, security is one of those things that, well, you can sit and stare at a screen monitor all day and call that security. No, or you can do different active things and keep people on their toes. That's where we are. But I'll tell you what, in the last week, the sense has been everybody are scratching their heads on this one. And I've seen more people shaken, even Marshall County a few weeks ago, which affected us locally. But this issue in Florida the last few days has done it even more. And trying to thread that needle, and some days it seems like you're not doing enough. Some days it seems like you're doing too much.
Right.
This goes back again, though, to, the U.S. Department that used to be called Health, Education, and Welfare.
I do remember that.
We're concerned about the health, education, and welfare of our kids, from what we fought this year with safety, which has been an everyday thing, from health.
From the flu on.
From the flu on. That's just another part of what goes into running a school and somewhere in there trying to get kids educated safely. And we continue to meet and look for different ways to address the issue.
Can I share something with you, a teacher,
sure,
shared with us here at the station?
Sure.
If one of my former students comes in my classroom with a gun, I don't feel that I can shoot him and hurt him. Interesting point of view. And it's weird because I've always been very fond of my teachers. I guess I was lucky. Maybe I was a teacher's pet. I don't know. But in the minute that I heard that, I was like, I kind of get that. I could never see one of the teachers I saw. But then again, I cannot put myself effectively into the place of the shooter either. So maybe there's some lack there. But,
well, it's one like we've seen in movies, real life, soldiers going off to war, personalized. That makes it tough. I've been in law enforcement drills where the officers are told, hey, you're going to go into a place where it might be your kids or kids you know as you're trying to go after the shooter. Think how much mentally prepared and training that takes for the professionals and how to act in this. And that's
a
why
shooting
you can
gallery where every little metal duck is someone you know.
Right.
Wow.
Psychologically. And then even thinking about it, to plan for it, to think about it, is a place a lot of people don't want to go. And that's, unfortunately, where we've been at this last week. And, of course, parents are affected, concerned, especially the younger the kids are. What are we telling them? What are we exposing them to?
Especially the younger ones.
Yes, so it is tough and touchy, and we've heard a lot of ideas. We've thought through a lot of these ideas, too. Just know that as we work there, too, as part of our community, we're committed to make sure it's as safe as we can make it and make sure we're prepared. But It's not easy, and I think that's where everybody's kind of at right now, is how do we get through this,
How do we not become the next Parkland,
right,
or Marshall or Columbine
or Jonesboro or Arkansas or
right,
places like that? And so that also at some point would take money from more security guards to even some of the conversations about arming people. That still takes money to train and
bulletproof
buy and
glass,
do those.
Redoing locks and doors, Kevlar mats, desks that flip over and are bulletproof shields.
That's all money.
Good luck, Matt.
And what do we,
I mean that in a sincere way. I'm really curious. No, this is not curiosity. Curiosity is I wonder how many vertebrae are in the neck of a giraffe. This is something else. And it's weird because I'm so doggone militant about things like this. You know, I mean, I can be like, well, let's put a tower here, a tower here. We'll put the barbed wire here, right? Man, that's no way to go to school.
No.
And protecting them psychologically, because they do not have the tools that an adult has to be a little more hardened to some of the facts of life. And all I can tell you is my mom has often told me this, even when I was very young, about my brother and sister: leave them alone, let them be children as long as they can be children. Life is tough. And this is kind of where I think about this. We have a responsibility of protection, and it doesn't need to be a burden to them to get it done.
And you've seen the tapes of Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, saying, look for the helpers. And that's where all of us are at, trying to be those helpers, trying to prepare ourselves for eventuality we hope doesn't happen, and doing it as sensitive way as we can as we work with our kids every day.